Hey everybody, welcome to Tall But True, where the tales might sound tall, but they are true. As far as you know, I'm Ben Bailey, your host, with my co-host, Mr. DC Benny.
Hey everybody, good to be here, Bailey.
And we are here, yeah, this is great, dude.
Oh, we got it. Man, I'm looking forward to this one. Really looking forward to this. I didn't really prepare much for this, but I feel like it's one of those ones that's gonna flow, and our guest today, you know, just... He's hilarious, man. He's hilarious
and such a staple of the comedy scene in New York, and a good friend and a great comic. And he was like typical. It's Lenny Marcus, everybody.
Lenny Marcus.
Thanks for having me.
Lenny was like, I don't have stories. I was like, Lenny, you have stories. We've been doing stand-up in these clubs for 2 decades. You have stories. Everybody, we've all got stories, you know?
Yeah, we have stories. But do you want to name names? Do you care if people don't? You know, I'm trying to stay politically correct.
I leave that to you, man. You say what you want to say.
I'll change a couple of...
I often leave names out if it's like civilian friends.
Right, right.
And stuff. Yeah. I won't say their last name, or I'll just refer to them as a buddy because you don't know if they want that stuff to be known.
Yeah, right.
But if there's comics, then whatever. I mean...
But what it's up to you because, you know, you got to live with it. And this episode is comic beefs.
So we're not talking about food.
No, we're talking about friction between...
Yeah, friction. Like, you got beef?
Comedic performers, that happens inevitably.
Okay. Oh, God, so many times, right? As soon as you start thinking about it, you're like, holy shit, there's so many stories about this.
What beefs do you got? I don't know that you guys... Well, I know back
I got
in the...
beef with you, Marcus.
Oh, what did I do?
No, I'm just kidding.
You saved my life a few times. Talk about comic beefs. Like, when we started late at the Cellar... Those spots were like 1:25 in the morning, 1:40 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then you could smoke back then. And I used to say I used to bomb so bad that I could hear the smoke. You know what I mean? That's how bomb.
You could hear people taking drags. Yeah, cigarettes.
You could just hear you could see it coming at you, and you could just hear how bad I was
doing. Those days were so different.
So different.
Smoking inside alone is a huge difference. But we used to call in Mike Royce. Remember Mike Royce used to book
the
late night.
He hosted everywhere.
He hosted it and he booked it.
That's
at first. I auditioned for him. That's how I got into the Cellar. I auditioned for Mike Royce. And then Esty would leave, you remember? She would leave all of the spots for the whole week on an outgoing message. And you'd have to call and listen to the whole thing.
Yep.
At 1:10, Ben Bailey. 1:16, Lenny Mark.
She would do that, but here's the funny part. There was always a catch-up spot at like 1:25 was a catch-up spot. So nobody had the 1:25. So
right,
it went from like 1:15, 1:25, there was no, and then 1:35, and that was like the last spot. So sometimes I was like, oh my God, I was in like the 1:35. I was after the catch-up spot. Like, nobody had the spot before me. That's how I looked at it. Like, I'd rather have dead air
than that guy. This is how low down on the pole you are.
Yeah, that's right. After dead air,
you're going on right after
no one. That's how I felt.
The show ends, we have 15 minutes, and then you're on.
That's right.
I lucked out there with, I think I was, you know, doing one, you do an audition or whatever, and I remember Manny walked by, and he's like, the Puerto Rican kid's funny.
That's awesome.
And you're in. If Manny said you're in, you liked it.
Yeah. That's how I really got in. Royce passed me, and I did late night weeknights there for like... a fucking decade.
Right.
Were those food spots?
Those were food spots.
Yeah,
Initially, they were food spots. And you would get one drink. But I got in trouble because they figured out that for a long time I had been getting one drink at the downstairs bar and one drink at the upstairs bar.
Oh, my God.
Bailey? Ben, please.
That's so funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. My early days there were me, Judah, Natterman, Maniv, just watching them eat. I couldn't eat at 2 in the morning, but they would eat those free food. Judah ate her out of house and home.
Dude, Judah and I had a contest to be the highest paid comic at the Comedy Cellar because we were getting paid in food. So we would eat. We would see who could eat the most and run up the biggest bill to be the highest paid comedian. And we had some very impressive bills. It was close. It was very close. And then Rush Maniv got wind of the contest, and he just fucking annihilated us.
He had like a big pot belly, and now he's shredded.
No,
he
now
gave
he's
it all up, right?
He doesn't he,
he
like
eats every
day off
day.
Eating?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
I don't know. Dude.
I mean, he looks great. Yeah. He looks great. But the day off from eating, that's like Somalian. I mean, that's crazy. How the fuck do you do it?
I don't know how you do that.
That's hard.
He was such a funny guy and
hilarious.
But awesome anyway, dude. thank you for saving my life. I always tell people this. Ben would save my life down there because it was I would bomb and then somebody would pop off. You know, there are the eight people who are left. With like get off or whatever it was, and
Boo,
I would say something so nasty to them. I'll tell you the story. There was a guy. I think it was either you or Frank Gerisi. This one, remember Frank?
Yeah.
One of you guys saved me this one time.
Frank Gia.
And the story I have about this one, not Frank Gia, right?
People are looking for him. It's Frank Gia.
Right.
His my favorite joke. I only remember one. I rarely remember anybody's jokes, but remember his joke like about the fly on the wall? His father would kill the fly on the wall.
Oh, yeah, and leave it there.
And leave it there. show the other flies.
Yeah. Mosquito. It was a mosquito. Send the other mosquitoes a message.
That's how Italian he was. Yeah, it's a great joke.
Great joke.
So, and then, anyway, so one day I was being heckled by a guy, and he's got his arm around his girlfriend. Get off, you know, and mercilessly. And I finally, and I just came up with this on the spot. I had thought of it, like if I was ever being heckled, because this has gone on for a while. Yeah. So he's heckling me, and then he says to me, he goes, "Just get off the stage." I go, hey, man, let me ask you a question. Can I ask you a question? He says, "Why?" I go, "How much would you pay to lick the pole on the subway?" And he goes, "What?" I go, "How much would you pay to lick the pole on the subway, tough guy? You're so tough, like $1,000? He's like, "No, man." I go, $5,000? He goes, "Nah, I don't know." I go, $10,000. Would you take $10,000 to lick the pole on the subway? And the guy goes, "Yeah." I go, "But you'd lick that skanky pussy sitting next to you for free, right?"
Holy shit.
The 10 people go, "What the fuck?" Like murder. I go from zero to murdering, right? But he goes, "I'm going to fuck." Like, "Good night, everybody." I get off. Next guy I think is you. This guy gets up, right? Walks to the corner, right? You saw the whole thing. Thought it was hilarious. Yeah, walks to the corner. Ben steps right in front of the guy and goes, pushes him back with one finger and goes, "Have a seat. Have a seat." He goes, "I'm going to fucking kick that guy's ass." He goes, "No, have a seat because you started with him." And then you turn around like, "All right, get out of here.
Beat it, Lenny."
Yeah, and I beat it home. I was home before that guy hit his seat.
We can lick that skank again.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. It was my
great. Oh, you're welcome. I vaguely remember that.
Yeah.
The enforcer.
There was a couple of
adventures down there. Yeah.
You saw me a couple. I remember a couple times you were down there, and like there was one time nobody was in the room. Like there was no crowd.
Literally.
So literally no crowd. It's just you were kind of just on stage goofing around, talking and doing weird stuff, like just goofing about the. And then Louis Schaefer, who was the house MC.
Oh, he came up as soon as you mentioned comic beefs.
Yeah,
there you go. I always wanted to kill that guy.
came down with like three, you know, tourists or whatever. Right. And as they're coming in, you know, they're briefing him. Louis sees you doing this. He's like, "Get up the stage. Do your act.
Yeah. Oh, they don't want to hear that. These people don't want to hear that.
Just do your act." And you're screaming at him, "Louis, shut the fuck up, Louis. Like, I will kill you right now, Louis." And then, "Right this way." And she's like, "Right this way." Three people are it was hilarious.
Oh, Louis Schaefer was the most annoying dude.
He annoyed you. He annoyed you really good.
Yeah, he definitely got under my skin.
He got on everybody. Yeah. Everybody.
He's annoying, but he really
You're
annoyed
you. You're a handsome man.
Yeah.
But you, it was funny. Beautiful people. It was funny how he turned this completely unlikable persona at the Boston when he would, you know, he'd go up there. He had his blue blazer and his clipboard. And he always told me, he's like, "People listen to you. When you have a blue blazer, it shows authority and people listen to you, right?"
Yeah.
And they would listen to
him. Clipboard.
These crowds were fucking ill, man. They were ill. You know, these were some gangster crowds. And he would be up there and be like, "Handsome man, gorgeous man, beautiful looking people at me."
Yeah. Yeah. And he got away with it.
Louis Schaefer, not gay.
Yeah.
Lightly fruity.
Yeah.
They loved it.
He had a business card that's with a quarter of tape. To it. A quarter was taped to the business card and it said, "Louis Schaefer, call me."
Yeah, call me. Remember, yeah.
Call me.
So, I used to love that.
That's really
he's like a great character.
He was a great character.
In real life, he's just a really annoying dude.
He's annoying. Yeah.
I didn't hate the guy, but what he did that got me was he would stand in the doorway.
Right.
Yeah.
He was judging.
The reason he's even there is because he's bringing people in from outside to sit at the show. It's not because he's a great comic or anything. And he would sit at the door and criticize
I'd start a bit. He'd be like, oh, don't do that. Don't do that. Yeah, yeah.
You'd tell Ben not to do crowd work, and I'd be like, well, I wouldn't tell Ben anything, to be honest with you.
Lewis, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Yeah, it was really weird, and Ben wasn't kidding, and Lewis was like kept doing it.
Kept thinking it was a joke. Yeah. And then I finally remember he would put his picture up there.
Yes, yeah. I love this guy.
I would go up and flip that picture face down.
Not flip it face down.
Time.
It would be like, boom, bam!
Crack the glass.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember he had.
I got the last word on him. I'll tell you that in a second. Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, it's quick. There was this young chick that was like open. She was an open mic chick. She went up to Boston and she did okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she came off stage afterwards and he pulled her aside and he's like, look, you need to get out of this. This is not for you. This is not for you. You're not funny. You're terrible. You're not funny. And this chick is crying, right? Just like tears coming down. He's like, you're awful. You have to, nobody likes you. Nobody's laughing. Nobody's listening. Jesus. You need to go do something else. And I was like, I had to.
She's like, it never stopped you.
Yeah. I pulled him off. I was like, Lewis, man, you can't, you don't know that. You can't do that shit, man. You can't do that shit. You know, but he just was unable. There was no filter.
None.
And he crushed those, those new people.
Yeah.
God, he crushed them, man.
He would bring people off the street. For people listening who don't know what Lewis did, he was like the first Barker.
He was good at it.
Barker slash himself. MC.
Yeah.
And he would bark while the and show's host going the show.
Yes. Yeah. He'd be outside with a clipboard on the street, stopping people walking by, getting them into the club, making them part of the crowd, and then he was also emceeing.
Simultaneously alienating them, yes.
Right. Yeah, totally.
That's right.
But so he did that at the Boston for a while.
Yeah,
right? Then he ended up moving and doing it at the Cellar.
Yep.
And I think he eventually was on the outs over there.
He went back to the Boston.
He was always
went back
in
to
and
the
out.
Boston. And he came back over there one night, and I was sitting at the Cellar with Manny. Manny and I are sitting at the table. And that's why I was finally in to finish what I started before. Uh-huh. That's when I finally broke in and started doing weekends, is Manny watched me and said, why isn't this guy should be doing weekends.
Nice.
And then I started doing weekends. But so, then I'm sitting there and I'm talking to Manny and Lewis comes in and basically says, hey, I'd love to do what I do around the corner over here. Love to come in and start doing, you know, I could help get people in, I could MC. And Manny looks at Lewis and he looks at me and he goes, it's up to Ben. and I just went, nope.
I love that. Oh,
that
my
was
God.
The end of that comic beat.
Nice. I love that.
Could you imagine if they call and like that? That'd be great.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. So seldom do things work out that way.
Yeah.
What happened? What's the story? Somebody was telling a story about Comics Unleashed.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I got to hear this.
Yeah, they wanted Lenny to do Comics Unleashed, right?
Okay, yeah. I got an email out of the blue from the guy who's booking it. We're just going to call him Eric Flalalakowski or whatever it is. I'll just keep changing that name, but it's something like that. So he calls up. I mean, I got an email just out of the blue one day, and it starts with, and Ben likes this part of the story. It starts with, hey, like, big fan, you know? And I'm like, already I know this is what
shit. Yeah.
I love it right away. Right you're away. Like, suspicious because the guy says he's a fan.
Yeah, I know. You can call me all microbiggly shit on me for an hour for this. But you can call me cynical.
Yeah.
But how many people have really told you they were a big fan and were a big fan? I'm not. Nobody knows who I am. You know what I mean?
I'm a big fan. You're like, name the albums.
Exactly. Right. Name the albums.
Name one joke.
Name one album. This guy just wanted content. Like, if you're trying to butter me up, like, if I wanted to do your show, you didn't have to start with big fan.
Yeah.
Okay, for those of people out there who don't know Comics Unleashed, I don't know how you guys feel about the show. The worst show concept in the history of stand-up comedy. First
it's
all
very forced and
well, it's not stand-up comedy. It's really like it's just a way to package something in the cheapest way possible and really, to me, dilute this process. So the way, if you haven't seen the show, it's the host, Byron Allen, and he's saying, he'll go like, DC, I hear you have a great story about...
Here you have a German Shepherd.
You're a German Shepherd, yeah. And you would do the German Shepherd joke, and then he would laugh and go, ha ha, Ben, how's that house in New Jersey, right? What? What has happened? And the non-sequiturs would drive me crazy. So
it's just a throw to a bid every time.
Yeah. Throw to a bid, and then the third person, like, your mother's annoying, huh? You know, like, it would just, what is this show? The comics would never interact. It was basically you, he's just pimping you for the next bit. Which drove me I thought this was the most horrible thing that's ever happened.
It's unwatchable. It's unwatchable.
It's pretty awful.
A lot of people, and I respect this, want a credit, and they want it on their reel.
You get some
something.
Yeah. If you don't have anything.
And people watch it, though. It's people unwatchable, but people watch it.
Yeah. That's right. Hey, how come you don't do that show? Yeah. I'm not in the business to do that show. It's just not for me, okay? So that's...
Agreed.
You could say I could be a high horse person, but... Yeah. So he emails, and I'm already like, I don't know, dude, you know. So when he and I'm a big fan, I'm like, oh, boy. So now strike two, you know. Yeah. So I write back. And I know full well this is how it works. They pay to do the show, but they don't pay for the flight to L.A.
Or no housing,
and they don't pay for the hotel.
Yeah.
They don't pay for a car from the airport. Like, it's not, it's still pay you.
It's great if you live around
in
the
LA.
Corner.
Yeah. If they did it here, we'd all do it probably because you could walk to the theater. You want to pick up a couple of bucks.
And it would be a better show, too.
Yeah. Right.
If they did it in New York.
It's not overwhelming money, right? Yeah. It's not, whatever.
What do they pay you? $300, $500?
No, it was like, you know, scale, like 14 or something, 1400. So,
but you're going to spend more than half of that.
Most of it. Yeah. So it was basically, do you want an LA trip trade-off to do this show?
Yeah.
To have this on? I was like, no. So a lot of people are like, go do it. I don't want to do it. So he writes, I'm a big fan. So full well, just being polite, I wrote back, okay, does it, and just maybe trying to see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, before you know this
Do
stuff.
You know, like, does it pay to do the show? And how do you pick up, do you send me the travel and what hotel?
Right.
Thanks, Lang. And so he wrote back, no, we don't pick up the air. We don't pick up the hotel, but we'll pay you to do the show. So if you can make your way out to LA, we'll take care of it. So I wrote him back very nicely. I wrote him back, dear Paula Sasatowski, thanks for the offer, but if there's no air and hotel, I'm not interested in doing the show. Now, he had prefaced it by saying, he said, I'm a big fan. What are your avails for doing Comics Unleashed? And I wrote back and we
talked about it. Yeah, if you guys aren't paying,
I'm not paying. I'm not. Thank you very much for the offer, but I'm not interested in doing the show. I thought that would be the end of it, right? No. I got an email back that said, Lenny, okay, no problem that you're not interested. But just so you know, we weren't asking you to do the show. We were asking you if you were available to do the show.
What?
Right? I'm like, you're asking for avails? Why would you ask me? You're just asking for availability. That's like me saying to a girl, hey, are you available to go on a date with me? And then she goes, yeah. She goes, when are we going? And I go, oh, no, I was just wondering if you're available. I'm not asking you to go on the date. It's like I lost my mind. It was basically me telling him I don't want to do your show, and he was so petty.
He's last-wording you.
He's last-wording me on that. So I wrote him back, dear Eric, just so you know, listen, I'm wondering, are you available to go fuck yourself? Okay? I'm not asking you to go fuck yourself. I'm just wondering if you're available to go fuck yourself. And if you are available to go fuck yourself, then go fuck yourself. And that was the last one. So now I'm like, okay, that's over with.
Burned a bridge there.
I don't care, right? Here's the thing. 3 years later or 4 years later, I got another email out of the blue. I don't even remember. I just vaguely I know I did that. Nobody forgets that.
Right.
But I got another email out of the blue and it said, hey, it's Eric Bosatakowski. Are you available to do... the show, like, he had forgotten all about this.
Wow.
So season, like,
you
19.
You a big fan again?
I don't know if it's a big fan. I don't remember a big fan. Are you available to... I'm like, man, this guy either has the worst memory or everybody's told this guy to go,
to go fuck himself.
And he just says, all right, well, I'll just go back around. Who hasn't done it yet?
Yeah, we'll try to get somebody to do it.
Yeah.
We have no budget.
Evil.
I'm not condoning.
That's awesome.
But he's trying to book a show and he doesn't have anything to, you know.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
he doesn't have any money. He doesn't have anything to get people to do it with. It's fucking annoying.
He must. I mean, But wow. Why would you say that to somebody? You know, like,
wow, that's like some schoolyard shit.
I just wanted to see if you were available.
Yeah.
What is that?
Oh, fuck,
what are
you.
12?
Oh, you have another show that actually pays in a hotel?
I'm conducting a study of who's available on these nights.
I don't know. You know, look, I got to run around on a lot of stuff like that. Like for Letterman, it took me like 16 years to get on Letterman.
Yeah.
And, you know, the booker there gave me the runaround for
I got it big time.
And
I was like, fuck
to the
it.
Point where my dad was like livid.
Yeah.
Because like, the first time, you ever remember when you did Caroline's back in the day?
Yeah.
It was always the way to get ahead in the business was like you did Caroline's, you made a tape.
Yeah.
At Caroline's. And that tape
could
last you a long time. You went to see Mickey Klusman. It was the videographer.
Klusman. Yeah, you go see Klusman. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Locked in there with Klusman.
He was a videographer. You'd have to sit next to him. He'd smoke next to you. You know, like he was the only
massage parlor's on the floor right around the corner. All these guys are walking out. Yeah.
It was really weird. But you'd get that tape. And that tape, my first tape that I ever did at Caroline's, lasted me forever. But the host on all these tapes was Eddie
Brill.
Yeah. And he ended up being the Letterman booker. And my father, for years and years, he went, "That Eddie knows you. Eddie knows you since day one. Why isn't he helping you? All he said to me, he loves you. He loves you." I'm like, "Dad, I don't want to ruin his show business."
Yeah.
Eddie's a nice guy, but he's really not going out of his way to help me. And I have, like,
he's trying to get himself on. That's why he's doing the warm-up.
He did it like nine times. Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
Sorry, there's comic beef for me.
On that one?
Yeah, I think Eddie kept me off Letterman. Because I heard a story. I did those shows at Caroline's, the same ones you're talking about.
Yep.
I went in there and I would have great sets.
Yeah.
I had people who would come and watch me so I could get on them.
Right.
And I would have great shows in there. I'm not tooting my own horn.
Yep.
But I swear, I say fuck, Eddie Brill comes up to me and says, You're really funny, but you shouldn't say fuck so much. And I say, of course, fuck you. Because it's funny. I don't mean it.
Yeah.
In reality, I'm like, maybe that's a good idea, but it's funny. So I say, fuck you. And his face just goes... like I took all the air out of his lungs. He got so... He
didn't
was
translate. Yeah.
Did you immediately say I'm kidding?
And I did.
Okay.
But then I heard, years and years later, I heard from an unnamed source... That he was trashing me, talking shit about me, and saying that I was biting on his material.
What?
He was at a card game with a bunch of guys.
Oh, the card game.
And he was saying, Ben, this young guy, Ben Bailey, is a hack.
Really?
Yeah. And
that's weird.
Which I wasn't. I never stole his fucking bits.
Right.
I wrote some bits about similar types of stuff, expressions and shit like that.
Okay.
But anyway... So I have a little beef that I wasn't even thinking about
him. I'm glad I got that going.
Yeah, well, he told me I wasn't going to be on there.
He just said you're not going to be on.
He saved me. In a way, he saved me the time because it was like I put together a very nice, clean set,
mm-hmm.
you know, and according to the criteria and evergreen and this and that. And he did it at the old Gotham. And he was there, and he watched
one of the best places ever. The old Gotham.
The old Gotham.
Yeah, that was a great room when it was cooking. Yeah,
he was there, and he watched it, and he's like, "Yeah, it's you're just not Letterman's not going to like your kind of material." And I'm like, "All right, so you're speaking for
For he's like, let Dave ever? Decide.
I mean, all the material I have, and he's not going to like any 5 minutes. You know, nothing. Really...
Did he even have?
So I was like, you know,
booking power."
Who, Eddie?
I mean, he was the warm-up guy.
No, he was the booker.
He was the booker as well.
They went with him, you know, whatever you say, Eddie, whatever that word is, whatever you say, Eddie, you know.
Like, carte blanche.
Yeah. Carte blanche, whatever, you know. Because in certain ways,
he kept me off the show. That was my only goal when I started out doing stand-up was to get on Letterman.
Sucks.
I was such a fan
it's
of David
It's so funny
David
you say
Letterman.
That because that has been my only, that was my only goal.
Yeah.
And now that I did it three times, what's my next goal? Yeah. You know what I mean? What's my next thing?
I can relate to that feeling.
It's a really hard
feeling. There's
nothing
that's replaced it. That's your goal.
Yeah.
But you did get it.
Yeah.
I never got on there.
And I feel really lucky, like, when I hear, like, great comics like you guys. And like, I go back to literally, like, the day I started. I tell DC this story all the time, but we might as well do it for the podcast.
Do it for the podcast. I never heard it.
Yes, you did. I've told you this. It's I was – one of the guys I went to college was this guy, Craig Cohen. And Craig Cohen, he was 2 years younger than me, and we did intramurals together at college. So anyway – he ends up being like years later, when I 10 years after we graduated college is when you know I decided to do comedy. I started really late, but he's working at Abrams Artists and had worked his way up. He was like the number two man at Abrams Artists.
Right.
I don't remember who the top guy was at this point, but he. And then he would sit in on meetings, and so I went to his office one day when I was in the business, you know, just started. I'm like, he goes, have you been, you know, doing a lot of comedy, seeing people in the city? And I was just moving into the city. I said, yeah. And he goes, have you ever heard of this guy, DC Bennett? And I go, no. He goes, yeah, he's the big thing now, like here at Avon. Like, he's going to be the next big thing. He's the next big. And I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. And so now the first, like, maybe within 2 weeks, within a month, I see DC perform. And I'm like, oh, my God. It's DC.
Like, I can't. That's the next big thing? All right.
No, it wasn't like that. I was like, yeah, this guy's really good. You know, this guy, oh, that's DC Benny. That's so I was so like, I equated that as if I could get as good as DC Benny.
That's so funny, you know, man.
Yeah, it was really
so
funny.
Wow. Yeah, you had some heat at that time.
I had some heat for a little while.
You did some shit where you're doing these characters out on the street or something?
Yeah, I was doing like for Comedy Central and whatever. It was a good run. It was nothing, and then it was that. And then, up and down, man.
You got beef with anybody?
You know,
you don't have to name names.
I'm not going to name, but when Patrice and I had a thing that now Patrice O'Neill were very cool in the beginning. Like, he moved to New York, and I mean, I always thought, regardless of the beef or not, I was like, this guy's fucking hilarious. You know, he's
funny.
I never separate the artist from the, you know, like, well, maybe Hitler could paint or whatever, but I never separate the artist from the person. I try not to. You know what I mean? I try not to.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I always thought Patrice was hilarious. And we would hang out. We'd have these, I remember one night we hung out. Like, I gave him a ride somewhere. We just sat in my car and we talked for hours. I mean, it was just hours. I was giving him a ride back to the PATH train to go back to Jersey.
Right.
And we were pretty cool, man. He was pretty cool. He seemed to like me. And then I guess he started kind of blowing up. I started drinking more, and things started slowing down a little bit for me. I think, you know, the aforementioned heat kind of cooled off.
Uh-huh. Right. And then he had some.
He had some, and it started where we would always be on the same show, and a lot of times he'd be before me, and he started doing, like, double the time.
Yeah.
So if, you know, if you're next and you have a spot and the guy's doing an extra 25, you're going to miss your other spot
or whatever.
You're going
to miss your next spot. You're going to be fucked for the rest of the night unless you cancel one or something.
Yeah, so I got into it with him about that. I got into it and it started getting like a little physical and like, I was extra
salty.
Pissed off at that time, I think, you know, for a variety of things, but that especially. And then I think one night he said something. He was on this. Oh, I know what it was. You go to this cellar, and in the background, Tough Crowd would be playing all the time.
Always.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think one night I rolled my eyes or I made some comment. I'm like, oh, this again. This again. It's here at the table, and it's right behind us. I'm like, this again. It was Patrice, like, bloviating about something. And he got really, I think he got that really irked him or something.
Mm.
And so he started going on these anti-marriage harangues.
I remember
those. Because I was married. He would go on these anti-marriage
harangues. So was I at the time, I remember.
And he would just, And then somehow he laid into me about being married, and it was all a farce and like all this stuff, my wife and whatever. And then it started getting physical again. And that's where we kind of left it, where I just stopped speaking to him. I was like, I'm not even going to, we just stopped talking. So that beef, so then he, you know, then he passed away. The beef never got resolved, but I was still, I feel bad about it because, you know, I never went to his funeral. I didn't go to his funeral. I was so angry at the time. I remember Bill Burr called me up. He's like, you know, Patrice died and you want to go to the funeral? I'm like, man, I can't because I can't fake it. And I feel like the guy wouldn't want me there because we were at such a at odds, at such odds.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was kind of, it's not that's really tough. A funny story. Jeez.
That's really tough.
But I was so angry at the time, man. I was just, you know.
Comic beef stories are not always going to be hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then now, you know, I'm like, but I always appreciated the guy was funny. I could never take that away from
Patrice
him.
Patrice was funny, but he was also, you know.
He was an ass.
He could be mean.
He could be really mean. Yeah. But I
almost fought him. I almost got into fights with him several times.
One of the great roasts of all time was you just... You got him a couple
tonight,
of times.
The world's hungry shall feast on roast fillet of hack.
Oh my God.
That was great.
Your roast at Caroline's was one of the greatest. I mean, I don't know how that started, but when they started these little roasts downtown in the Boston, and then it went to Caroline's.
Well, that Patrice's
you out of
was
nowhere.
At Boston.
That was at the Boston. Yeah.
Patrice's was at the Boston. Jimmy Norton's was at Caroline's.
Right. I'm just. Oh, Patrice was at Boston?
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Oh, okay. So
it was
he was
the pig
on the
roast.
Dais.
Yeah, yeah Masavia made the. It was a. I have the flyer for it. It was the pig roast.
I'm not on it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not listed on the flyer.
I know you were angry because you had to get bumped. You had to sit. You wait till the end of the
bumped.
Night. Oh
they
yeah.
Kept pushing me back, and I was drinking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
by the time I got up there. I was half drunk.
Hilarious.
One of the best. And then P was like, "All right, I'm done." And the people were like, "No, keep going, keep going." You had like more. He's got more jokes.
I got another
Seriously,
half hour.
I tell people like that. Why aren't you on Roast Battle? Why aren't you on these shows? Like you would win this. I mean,
because
you
there
the
might be a beef with
this.
Jeff Ross.
Before we get to that, but one of the best times he was going to do one, whatever the Caroline's one. You're saying it was Norton, so we were.
Yeah,
we were,
Jimmy Norton's was at Caroline's.
The two of us were outside, and you were smoking at the time. So the two of us are standing up. So I'm like, "Hey Ben, you roast like oh, this is gonna be great." I was so excited, and I sat next to Lucian Hold.
Oh God!
During that whole
DePaulo
thing,
DePaulo made a joke about his fingers.
That's right, made a joke about his fingers, and I'm sitting next to him, and I'm literally like sinking in the chair, like I can't laugh at this. And we were right near the stage, but he couldn't find him, and Lucian
so
just took it. It was really uncomfortable. Anyway, but right before that one, and I've never written a roast joke ever. I'm the worst. And we're standing outside, and Ben, you're looking at, you know, you're a little, you know, nervous. It's a really tough thing to do.
Yeah, it's a big thing too.
You and I just look over. And there's this huge SUV when they had just come out with these SUVs. There's this monster black SUV, and you go, "Is that Patrice in the driver's seat?" And I go, "Yeah, it is Patrice." He kind of points at you, and I just go, "Oh my God, did he drive up or was he just sitting there and they built a car around him?"
Right? That's right.
And you go, "Holy shit, that's hilarious. Can I use that?" And I go, "All right." Well, like I just can't. I wasn't trying to be funny.
I did use it.
I think I was right.
I
you
used
did.
It on
you
the roast that night.
You used it.
I totally forgot about
and
that.
Literally, I have never been so happy in my life that a joke got you. You go up and in the middle, I'm not expecting he's going to pull this off, right? Right? He goes up and tells that joke, right? I'm watching Patrice as it's coming out of your mouth and it kills. And Patrice just mouths the words. He goes, "Lenny Marcus, motherfucker." Right? You could just tell like he was gonna hold that against me for the next like 5 years. But it was my only shot at him for all these all the nasty things he said.
Well, what's funny about that roast is prior to that, I had made a joke on one of the roasts when Esty walked in.
Right.
Because Esty was, you know, I mean, she controlled kind of downtown, you know, she ran, you know what I mean?
She's
she had
like
a lot of power. She had a lot of power.
Of the comedy
so
business.
She walked in and I went, "Esty's here, Heil Hitler," right?
And I remember that.
Some people laughed, but it was like people didn't want to laugh because it was so, and it just came out of my mouth. Yeah. And at the time I thought it was funny.
Oh, yeah.
She
shit,
called me
that.
The next day. She's like, "Dizzy." Oh, she's like, my relatives were killed by the Nazis. And she starts calling. She's, "You call me Hitler?" I'm like, "Essie, I didn't mean to call. I wasn't calling you. I was saying, like, you know, the way Hitler inspired fear." And I just kept digging myself in a hole, right? So I got.
She just said, "I'm sorry. Never happened again."
Well, I kept digging
me.
A hole.
That wasn't me.
But here's the best part of it. Here's the best part of it. She's like, "There is a line you do not cross."
Right.
Whatever. And she went on. And I was like, okay. So when I get unbanned from the club for a while.
From the cellar after.
It was right after that roast where DePaulo went on. She was like, "I just came from the roast and Nick DePaulo, he goes up there and he's talking about Lucian's fingers." Oh my God. I'm like, whatever happened to the Hitler shit? And she was she was cracking up laughing, man. I was like, what happened to that line we were talking about? That was the best,
yeah.
man.
He had a call that was so to apologize over the top. For the fingers. Yeah.
I remember he was like,
he felt bad.
He goes, How does he finger bang Vanessa when his fingers are falling off? Is he here?
Oh, my God. And I was like, yeah, he's here.
Dude, they were in the green room afterward. And Lucian comes in. Mm. He's standing in the doorway. And everyone's just like, quiet.
With the gloves on.
And he's like, well, that was a little bit uncomfortable. People making jokes about fingers falling off, and I am the guy whose fingers are falling off, and I'm there in the audience. It's like, oh my God. Only Lucian would just go straight at this right after it happened, you know, and just chat about it casually.
To be honest with you, he was the greatest at taking that stuff because they used to do the Christmas party every year, and I used to make films every year, and some of the films were like just... Lucian took it so bad in those films. He was the brunt of the joke, and that's what made the whole night great.
Oh, dude, some of those are great. Yeah. Those old parties were awesome.
They're awesome. Yeah. And one year was like, you know, being John Malkovich. It was like being Lucian Hold, and the portal was through his ass. So like everything was through his ass. The whole night was like something up his ass, coming out of his ass. It was like vicious. So I went up to Lucian. I go, at the end of the night, I just see him. He's standing in the corner. I go, so what'd you think of the films this year? And he goes, well, I took it particularly hard this year. I just lost it. But he had a good sense of humor about it. Like,
yeah.
And that's what made him great, you know? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, Lucian.
The beefs.
Speaking of beefs.
All right, so what's next?
I almost got into it with Patrice a whole bunch of different times.
Yeah.
And it was usually because he was just going so hard at me or somebody else or everybody else.
Right.
That I would just get to where I was getting angry.
Right.
And I'd be like, dude, I'm starting to get angry. I'm starting to really get fucking mad. Let's just let this be. And he thought it was an act.
Yeah.
Oh, you were acting.
He thought I was putting on an act.
No.
He didn't see the eyebrow raise up.
The chin come out. He'd be like, just do what you're trying not to do.
Yeah.
Just do it, man. And then finally, it got to a point where we were standing there, our faces an inch apart, staring at each other.
Really?
And I was like, you think I'm acting, dude? I'm not fucking acting. I want to smash your fucking head right now. And I'm doing everything I can to keep from fucking doing it. And he was like, everything changed. I said that, and he was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then my relationship with him was totally different after that.
Yeah. Yep.
He didn't give me shit. He realized that I wasn't kidding.
Yeah.
He thought I was pretending to be restraining myself when really I was scared. And then when he realized I wasn't and that he was really getting me mad and that I was really going to fucking physically attack him at some point, it was like there was a new line. And then we saw eye to eye after that.
It's amazing how that happens.
Yeah, it's weird. I had a couple of beefs like that. But he said, can I tell you one funny story? He once said, like, at the Strip.
Of course.
My picture was on the wall at the Strip when Lucian was. They've redone the picture since. But
I'm scared to even look.
I had the greatest spot for a long time. Yeah. Lucian put me, like, right in the middle when you walked in. It was Seinfeld was on top of me, and it was me, and then below me with Shirley Hemphill.
What's Happening.
And my joke was always like, oh, it's my dream in comedy to be on top of Shirley Hemphill. You know, like, it was right in the middle. Like, you could have met, like, I was like, this is the greatest. And of course, when he died, they moved me to, like, the top corner, you know.
Yeah.
But
I got moved behind the napkins.
But I remember Patrice just I walk in one day and Patrice and his whoever's sitting there with him is just staring at that wall. Like that, it was weird. It was like there was a show on the wall. And he's looking at the wall and he's like, look at that wall. He goes, look at those people who have great spots. Why is Lenny Marcus got like a 9 o'clock spot on the wall? That great spot. He should be up in the corner doing like an 11:30 spot. You know, like
I love how your Patrice sounds like Chris Rock.
Yeah, it does. I mean, he shit on me right in front of me, like telling me where my spot. Like my headshot wasn't good enough to even be in the right spot. Like
you got a 9 o'clock on the wall.
It's very funny.
You got a 12:30 on the show.
Yeah, I got to hand it to him. That was funny.
That is funny. He got me, man. That is funny. You weren't moved. After that, right?
Moved right after his ranting. No, Lucian wouldn't have cared. But the Lucian was not a big Patrice fan. But after he passed away, I think they redid it by like era somehow. You know, like the old guys were in the front, like the oldest, most famous, whatever, yeah, in the front, and then like right, the 95 to whatever's in a corner. Yeah, it was weird. I don't know how they did it. It's been like that ever since.
No one handled or even reveled in awkwardness better than Lucian.
Oh my
like
God.
He could just live there. He, like when he was already sick, he was at the club and he apparently...
The Booker at the comic strip.
Yes, yeah, Booker at the old...
Legendary Booker at the comic strip. Well, we
apparently he was sick and he was eating. He's sitting there at the table.
I'll tell you some good ones.
And he's eating, and he's eating salmon. And I might have actually told this on the show already on a different episode. I can't remember. But he's sitting there eating salmon and he coughs.
Yeah.
And a piece of salmon goes across the table... and hit somebody in the cheek.
Oh, no.
And he just keeps talking, right?
No, he doesn't just keep talking. He stops and he goes, "Are you aware of the salmon that's on your face? Are you just going to sit there with that fish on your face and pretend that it didn't happen?" It was so comic. It's just sitting there horrified, frozen. He can't do anything.
I went to a ball game. He was getting sick and he was coughing a lot. And I felt bad for the people in the front. Somebody got tickets all the time. And he's like, "You want to go?" And next thing I know, I'm going, it's me, Lucian. Remember this guy, Johnny Jackets? Remember that guy? John Russo. He was a young kid. He would refer to him as Johnny Jackets. Anyway, he would get tickets somehow. So it was
Johnny
us.
Johnny Jackets.
Yeah,
nice.
It was like, and Bush. I think John Bush.
John Bush.
So it was like the four of us at a baseball game. And then Lucian was such a liberal. It was during like...
Lucian was a liberal?
George Bush came on. It was one of the wars like was happening or... This guy's got to go back to late 90s or something like that. And he's like, "We might have to, you know, whatever course of action we take." It was probably right after 9/11. It was probably like 2001, late after that, or maybe the next baseball season we had attacked somewhere. And then, and I remember everybody was listening to the president quietly because it was on the Yankee Stadium Jumbotron. And Lucian's going, "Does this have to be in a baseball game?" And I'm like, "Shut the fuck up. You're going to get us killed."
You know, like, the president
everyone's is talking.
Listening.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, like he got his beef with the president. Like, really? Right now, Lucian? So he's coughing. That started it. And then he's coughing the whole day because he's sick. And he's eating a hot dog, and it's like, and I look down like in the seventh inning, and there's like hot dog painted on my like right, like little pieces of bun, like,
oh shit,
yeah. And the guy in front of me just kept like touching his back of his head. Yeah,
he would have addressed it if he had seen it.
Yeah, so are you just gonna leave the hot dog?
Aren't you gonna do something about it?
When I tried to audition, I auditioned at the strip.
Oh,
I don't know
brutal.
How many times I could not get in. So when I got with Abrams Artists, I would do well. So before I got with Abrams, then I go meet with Lucian afterwards. I remember the last time I was like, "Fuck it, I'm done," because he's like, "Well, DC, we already have enough Spaniards. We have JJ Ramirez. We have Joey Vega." Right?
Spaniard.
And I'm like, I'm not a fucking
Spaniard.
Oh, my Ponce de Leon.
You know, swashbuckler.
So there was that. He told me you have enough Spaniards. Then I get with the Abrams Artists, and he acted like he didn't even know me. They put me on a showcase. He's like, "I've never seen you before." I'm like, "Dude, you called me a Spaniard. You called me a Spaniard."
This guy reminds me of,
you got me in. And I remember one of the last times seeing the guy, I had driven up from downtown, and there was a parking space. And it was tough to park around there. It was always tough to park around
God,
there.
Oh, God, parking.
So I saw this parking space, so I pull up in front of it. I'm going to back in, and Lucian had that little VW or something, and I see this little VW go bzz, 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 and go into the space, and I'm like, "Who the fuck is this?" I get out of the car, it's Lucian, and I had to go get another space. So I ran, you know, found another space, ran inside, you know, to do my spot, and I saw Lucian. I'm like, "Dude, you took my space." He's like, "I didn't take, it wasn't your space. It doesn't belong to you." He's
it
like, "To the winner
who
goes the spoils."
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, there was no arguing with that
Oh,
guy.
God.
Yeah.
We should just do Lucian stories.
Oh my God. I got a
bunch.
If you want me back, I got 20 Lucian stories. So does Barry Weintraub. He's if you could get Barry.
Oh, yeah.
Because we had, when he passed
Donovan
away,
too would.
They asked us to go and do like this retrospective for him at, we had, you know, he had his, not a wake or whatever it was, like a tribute to him at the, some church or something on the up, Upper West Side, and if people came right. in to speak, Chris Rock's.
Oh yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
And that was great. I closed that show.
Chris Rock was very. It was very honest about it too. He's like, Lucian wouldn't put me on. Until Eddie Murphy, or you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. Like you know, wasn't that like tribute-y?
Yeah.
And Vanessa was, of course, odd as always. But I closed it. They wanted me to take all these tapes over the years, and you know, make
put them into a
video. And so I went up and you know told a quick story and then showed the video. So they loved it so much. Yeah. They're like, we're gonna do one at Montreal like that. Can you and Barry had filmed him before.
I remember.
Death,
yeah.
And we had gone up and done that, which was just like the craziest.
I was there. Wasn't I at Montreal with you guys that year?
Maybe. It was a special show. Yeah. Lewis Black came up. So, but I had a list of all the things. I got to go back and get this list, and we'll do it again sometime. But we. A list of all the horrible things he had said to people during their critiques. I had asked them, and they ranged from like horrific to hilarious to, you know.
It's a funny act, Ben, but you know, like, but anyone could do it. That's what he said to me the first time I auditioned.
Oh, my God. He said to, you know, he called Dimitri like a low-energy wordsmith.
Well, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, he called...
take that, Dimitri.
What do you say to Orny Adams? Something like, oh, shit. I don't know, maybe your tongue is bigger than your mouth. some weird thing like that.
Orny was like,
That was awesome.
Man. I'm the genius voice of our generation.
Seems to be a speech impediment.
Well, so back to the beefs.
Who's got beef?
All right, I got a beef. Well, we have beef, and literally with beef. You were there for this. I'm not sure if you were there
for this. I was there for this. Okay.
The Johnny Lampert steak night.
Yes.
One of my big beasts now is, this is big.
I am so excited right now.
Okay, so Johnny Lampert is a comedian.
Yeah, I remember Johnny Lampert.
Who worked the strip all those years and then decided, all right, well, I'm...
Had some heat for a while.
A little bit of heat, maybe. He had a theme
about how he needed the couch.
That's right. His whole thing was
living in his kind of
looked
parents.
Like Barney Rubble, and he lived with his parents, and he was lazy, and that's why he lived in the basement. That's what he aspired to.
Barney Rubble. He kind of looked like Barney Rubble.
It was a very marketable act. It was very marketable.
It was. So then he got eaten, and then it kind of dissipated, and couldn't get in the cellar, and like you know, and then he decided he was going to become a booker, and
he opened a club or something, didn't he?
No. He's Headline Entertainment, and he's
pretty successful with it. Right?
Very successful with it, and little do we know, you know, it's like any other booker. But very untransparent. So if he said he offered you $500 for a gig, I'm not sure he wasn't taking $1,500, and the gig was two. You know, nobody really knows. To the point where I had so many arguments with him over this. As far as like, you know, like he would call me and go, I'd answer the phone like this, hello, and he'd go, chirp, 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 chirp. And I'm like, what? What does that mean? He goes, all you do is talk. Chirp, chirp, chirp. You and all your friends, you all talk about who's making what. Like, yeah, that's what we do. We want to figure out why we go to do a temple gig. And they say on the way in, it's $70 a head. And there's like 2,000 people in there. And I'm getting 300 in the middle. Like, why is this?
Where's the fucking money?
Where's the money? You know, like,
just give us the fucking money.
Right. And he would say, it's none of your business with the money, whatever it is. But every once in a while, they'd hand you the check. This is gone.
Right. And then you know.
And you realize, oh my God, it's a $10,000 check. And we're all adding up to like $1,000. And Johnny's making $9,000, you know?
Yeah.
So what? I had arguments with him over what is the acceptable amount of commission you could take on a gig. And then to the point where, you know, don't tell. Then it was like, you know, stop talking to the other people. And I, you know, somebody would give me a ride and I'd go, they're like, I'm really sick of hosting. And I go, well, then don't. And they like, well, what do you mean? I go, well, when he offers it to you, just say no. And I go, sometimes you just got to say no. And just tell him you want a middle and that's what you want to do. So I would get a call. What are you putting things in people's heads for? You know, why are you doing that? Why are you putting the idea in their head? Like, why? Like, I don't know. We're just talking comedy. Like, they
trying to help them.
Trying to help them.
What
they're
do you think?
Meanwhile, they're like, well, Lenny said, you know, like, first of all, leave me out of it.
Yeah.
Second, make it your idea. You know, like, so there would be like arguments about this like constantly. So now here, the big beef started with this. But he did get me a lot of gigs to start, like these real gigs. So I felt, you know, as stupid as I am, I'm nice. So there was I knew a guy.
Lenny, I don't think you're either stupid or nice.
I'll take both. I'll take it. So
obviously, I'm just kidding.
We
So there was bullshit. He was a comic for years.
He's a comic for years.
And he starts
years.
Booking people and, right. And financially raping them.
That's right. To the point where he'd be like, you know, I wouldn't take $500 one day for a gig. And he's like, I don't see who else is paying you $500? That's what he would say. And I would get mad at that. Like, well, I don't care. I'm just telling you, I'm not getting it from you. Because let's say I do three spots in the city or four spots in the city on a weekend. And that's, I don't know, whatever that added to $400. It's worth it to me not to leave the city for the extra $100. And I have to pay for the car. And it's my time wherever I'm driving. And it's the middle of winter. So you know what? I'll just take my chances here. And he would say, I think you're making the wrong move. I'm like, no, I'm not making the wrong move. You're just being cheap. Like, I would say, like, if you gave me, like, $600, you're my best friend. If you're giving me $5 and I got to pay for all the expenses and I don't walk away with anything after that, you're being a jerk, you know? So, but he'd go, and then his next argument was always like, well, I got two kids and, I just got this boat. And I'm like, you got a fucking boat? I'm like, I don't have health insurance, you cunt.
You're showing your hand.
Losing
my mind. Your hand.
Yeah. If you ever want to come out on the boat, no, I don't want to come out on the boat. I want you to pay us more money than have a boat, you know?
Yeah. Don't have the fucking boat. Pay us what we're supposed to be getting for the gigs.
And so now I'm like, and I'm ungrateful. I'm like, oh my God, John, I don't even know. Like, do me a favor. If it's under this number, I give him a number. Don't call me. But he'd always call me anyway to see, maybe
see
if you're open. See if you get. And that's how he does it with all the people, even to this day. He calls him and says, will you take this? He knows the bottom line that you will take and will call you with that number. It's kind of genius in a way.
Keeping as much as he can keep.
That's right.
And so, afterwards he asks everybody, how did the other guy do?
That's right. How did the other guy do? Which drove me crazy too. He would go, How did DC do? Well, he killed. Did he kill? Yeah. That was like a big thing. I was like, all right, you know what? When I started doing better in the city, I was like, I'm done with this guy, you know, because he's just making me upset.
Yeah.
Okay. But the kicker.
He's not making your life better.
The story
I'm
going to tell you is this. So I know a guy. He's the head of. It's a corporate, whatever. He's got a corporate. They want somebody big. It's over my, you know, fame level. He wants to book a comedian.
Right.
So they want Lewis Black, and there's another huge story with Lewis Black. But anyway, the story, eventually they settle on Susie Essman. And what I do is I give Johnny Lampert this gig. So because of all the gigs, and I go, of all the gigs that you've given me over the years, I'm going to pay you back with this one. I don't want to deal with the corporate guy. I know you know everybody. Get him whoever he wants. This guy's great. Whatever the money is, you take it. So they go out and get...
So you hand it off.
I hand it off to Johnny. I throw him the bone. We're even. Okay? And so...
I'm out. That's it. I'm out.
So I give it to him, even through all the strife of all the whatever, and she makes like, I don't know, it's like $20,000, you know, for this one nighter.
Right.
Wow. Nice. That's sweet. A nice in the city.
Oh God, right? That's sweet.
That's she a takes great the gig.
Yeah. Let's say, and I tell him though, I go, you take more than 10%, I will find out, and I'll fucking kill you, because the guy's a friend of mine.
Right.
The guy who runs the company.
You told him.
I tell him flat out, you take more than 10, I'll kill you. So he didn't. He took. Whatever it was, $2,000, you know, and she made $18,000 or whatever it was, and they dig. He drives into the city because he's got to protect that $2,000, and hand goes right up to the and he wants it for next year. You can see like they're gonna do it again. I'm gonna make this every year, you know. How crazy he is. He's like going in. Hey, you sure your friend? Just be nice. Just take it. Whatever he wants, give it to him. They bring Susie. They love her, right? Comes back. Calls me next day. It went fabulous. Do you think they'll do it again next year? I don't know, John. He goes, well, just make sure you put in the work. I'm like, we're even. All right. And he goes like this. He goes, all right. He goes, thank you. Do you want anything off of that? I go, what do you mean? He goes, you want some money from that? I'm like, no, just thank you for all the gigs you've done. I would like to be paid more in the future, possibly, but you know, thanks for everything you've done. We're even done. He goes, all right, you sure you don't want to? He asked me 10 times. I go, no. Okay. 1 week later, he calls me. I got this gig up in wherever. He goes, it's like, it pays $400. And I'm like, didn't we have a discussion about if it's under a certain amount of money? He goes, yeah, but you know, like, he goes, do me a favor. And I fucking lose it. I go, do you a favor? You want me to do you a fucking favor? Susie Essman was a motherfucking favor, you asshole! That was your fucking favor! You fucking didn't have to do anything but pick up a goddamn call. I booked the whole fucking thing. All you had to do is deliver Susie Essman, you piece of shit. And I swear to God, to this day, he makes me laugh thinking about this. He goes, all right, I'll give you another $50 for the call.
I got a temple coming your way.
That's the best. God.
Fuck.
Amazing. So
that is the best.
The long story short of this is the next year, I done it 2 years, that they did it 2 years, and I got Attell.
The corporate.
And the money went up. Attell did it the next year for crazy money, and he thanked me. It was even crazier money. And then, but they really, the big fish was Lewis Black, and they really wanted Lewis. And
this is year three of the
thing. They couldn't get Lewis. And I call Henley, and I was telling the story. By now, Johnny has driven me absolutely insane with, like, stuff like this, you know? And anything I say left, he says right. I say blue, he says black. It's crazy. It's
contrary to everything you say.
I can't deal with him anymore. And I go, John, it's best if we never, if I don't deal with you, you know. And if I talked to somebody, I would still get a call from him walking. I remember screaming at him in Second Avenue because I haven't spoken to him in months. I had worked with Sherry Davey, again, complaining about money and whatever. And he calls me, you work with Sherry Davey and now she's got ideas on what she wants to do. And I'm like, I go, I'm screaming on 33rd and 3rd. I can remember it like, fuck yeah. Like, shut the, don't fucking call me. This is not my problem. This is your problem. You're a fucking thief. You put you're stealing from these people. You fucking suck. Don't call me ever again. You know, like shit like that.
Right.
So I tell Henley this story, Vic Henley, who's the king of stories, Henley. By the way.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And he goes, why the hell do you keep giving him this gig? You know, like, why do you give him this gig? And I go, well, he goes, just do it yourself.
Yeah.
And I go, you know what? I am going to do it myself. And a long story short on this with Lewis Black, some things went right, some things went wrong. But I ended up opening for whatever that next year was.
Yeah.
And
opening for Lewis?
It wasn't Lewis because something went wrong. It was a disaster in some ways. But the money was so big that my cut was huge.
Right.
You know? And my cut was so big, it probably added up to every Johnny Lampert gig times 10 that I had ever done. Like, wow. It's the craziest money.
Don't tell me you gave it to Lampert as some kind of tribute.
No. No. What I did was, and you were there, I took everybody he fucked over the years that I went with to dinner.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I went. Really nice. We went out to Johnny Lampert.
You use a commission.
For Johnny Lampert
to round up all the people Lampert fucked over and
it
take them out
fuck
for dinner.
You, Lampert
it was
dinner.
Called Johnny Lampert Fuck You Steak Night. And DC.
I wish
there.
I had done it just so I could have gone to the one right? of this dinner.
Corey was there. Corey Kahaney, like Cotter, and Rogel. All the people hated him. Like this
hilarious.
Whole steak dinner. Right?
This is a short film. This should be a short film.
It's a crazy short. So it was like everybody, you know, even people like we had like a couple of fallouts because people like were still being booked by them and they thought it was like a conflict of interest. I'm like, look, nobody has to know about this. You know, nobody's gonna think anything bad. You could still work for him. I don't care. You want to take $200 when you should be making $5? That's your prerogative. I'm just saying, I'm taking you to dinner because I just pulled off the biggest fuck you ever. So instead of giving him a gig, I made this chunk come to dinner.
Very generous.
I thought it was benevolent and also kind of vindictive. And I brought the I printed it. Remember, I gave a toast. You want to hear the toast?
Oh, this is the toast from the dinner.
Toast from the
dinner. Oh my God, do I want to hear it?
I thought it'd be good for your podcast.
Lenny Marcus is in it, man. Listen, he's like Meisner.
Great, dude. This is fantastic. I want to pour a drink.
Oh yeah, we were all drinking wine, right? We had wine. Anything these guys wanted. It was the greatest night. I would love to have another one. I said if this keeps going on, and I make any commission off of this next year, we'll do this every year. But it never happened again. But. The company's great. They just went.
It's hard to follow that one.
It really was. I go, we are here tonight to celebrate the working comedian. We celebrate the taking back of the ever non-transparent nature of the business and the shady dealings that go along with it. We give back to our brethren not only because of vindictive nature, but also to right wrongs and feel empowerment. Tonight, no one tells us we are not good enough to feature at a firehouse or ask if you killed or killed. No one blames you if it didn't go stellar. Nobody talks you into underpaying you and then 1090s you in April. Tonight, no one gossips behind your back and then right to your face or tells you what you need to do for your career. Tonight, we celebrate a man who should have a dinner like this for us every year, but chooses a boat for himself instead, unless, of course, you make him a lot of money, then he might get you a keychain, right? Which is what he gave to everybody.
Keychain.
Oh, I got a keychain. A man who tells you how hard his life is while you have no health insurance or have a handout his business, or has him hand out his business card for you at your gig. So tonight, which he would do, I'd go to a temple. He goes, if they really like you, hand out my card.
I'm like, Tape a quarter to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tonight, our non-guest of questionable honor is Johnny Lampert. For those of you feeling guilty, it's understandable. It is a dichotomy. On one hand, he has gigs. He does provide us with work and money for our basic needs. On the other hand, does he give us what we deserve? Or just does he give us what he thinks each one of us will take and keep the rest for himself? Is he a good businessman? Or is he morally corrupt thief of the highest order? Is there a reason he has his own boat and I have to work on one? Well, people, I have walked upon our guest of honor's shoes, and Vic was alongside for the ride. Henley was there, obviously. And while not as easy as I thought, we are here today because not only did I do Mr. Lampert's job for a day, but I did it better than him. We are better here today because I share the wealth, a.k.a. Johnny's commission, with you, the workers. The comics in the trenches, in my opinion, the better deservings. Yes, maybe.